welcome to the Eye on the U podcast, the Miami Herald's Miami Hurricanes podcast. I'm David Wilson. I am joined, as always, on the other line by Susan Miller-Degnan, our Hurricanes beat writer here at the Herald. Susan, are you saving up for World Cup tickets?
Yes, I am. I'm ready to give a body part.
We're recording this Thursday afternoon. You know, kind of always a little quiet time in the college sports calendar as we're talking today. Big story of the day is obviously the World Cup. We're not going to talk about that, even though it will be at the Miami Hurricane Stadium, which, you know, everyone wants a new stadium. But when you look at the things that Hard Rock Stadium gets to host and Miami gets to say they play there, that's pretty good. That's very actually cool. Not a bad transition to our main topic today. We're going to basically break this into two halves. Second half, we're going to dive into some recruiting because we have not talked really any recruiting on this show lately, and we are in recruiting season. Next weekend is the Legends Camp, which is the new Paradise Camp that actually neither of us will be at. We'll both be out of town that weekend. Barry Jackson will be covering it for us. But anyway, that's always a big, big weekend and a big marker of an important time in the recruiting calendar. But where we got to start is the NCAA is snooping around Miami again, in particular with conjunction to John Ruiz and his how should we say outspoken NIL efforts, brazen NIL efforts. I don't know what the proper adjective is, but obviously Miami has become one of the biggest stories in this NIL world with you know, how visible and public John Ruiz has been as a figurehead, a one person entity, kind of responsible for a lot of the money Miami athletes are being promised. I think you talked to him the other day amid this NCAA investigation, and he said,
or maybe it's not
maybe an not investigating. Whatever we'll call it,
whatever they're calling it, inquiry,
probe inquiry. Yeah, they all are kind of synonyms a little bit.
Agree.
He said he is about $7 million. Money,
yes,
$7 million signed away to players this year. Obviously, the question that the NCAA is trying to figure out is are particular with a guy like Nigel Pack who announces a $400,000 a year deal basically the moment after he commits to Miami, are these enticements? Is it a pay to play thing? Like I just said, you talked to John Ruiz the other day, and everyone can check out that story at MiamiHerald.com or in the paper, I guess Thursday's paper was it in, or Wednesday's paper. What were the big takeaways from talking to him? And what are the senses you've gotten about this NCAA question asking, I guess we'll call it.
Right. Well, the NCAA is, you know, says they're cracking down. We knew that as far as
they've been talking about it for about a month. Maybe 2 months.
Yeah, exactly. Not announcing that they don't, that, you know, that you can't induce recruits and that it would be, you know, cracking down and monitoring NIL deals, excuse me, to make sure that there are no violations, and that apparently their intention is not to go after the actual student athletes, but the boosters. Right. I don't know if they've said that. That's what we've sensed. They're the ones that have the money. He said that he told me that he was asked by UM to come to, explain to the NCAA how he goes about this process and how he, you know, what it entails, his sponsorships or whatever, and his with the players. And he said he happily came to talk about it. And he said he talked to one man and two women from the NCAA, and there were several UM people there, obviously, he said. And that's it. He said he talked about how he puts his deals together. He gave suggestions. He wants the NCAA to be more involved and to be able to approve of these deals. The NCAA, I mean, it's not the, excuse me, the schools.
Yes.
The schools, I think. And actually, I think the NCAA too, also. But the schools don't really do that now. They just make sure, they look at the contracts and, you know, what and whether they believe that they're following the rules and stuff. Mm-hmm. But they don't, that's pretty much it. They don't really do, they stay out of it. That's why, you know, the coaches never talk about it, and they right. don't talk about it much. They kind of, they're separate.
Yeah, they're supposed to be independently made deals between student athlete and
right. But there's no set rules.
No rules. That's the problem. That's the elephant in the room. It's, and you know, it's the NCAA. I think I've said it on this show probably before. They basically made a gamble that, hey, they're never going to be, we're never going to let players get paid in any manner. They lost on that gamble, and they were caught totally unprepared when the law came for them, basically, and were like, you guys are breaking the law by banning this kind of stuff. So now for the last year, it's almost a year, right? I think it was
almost July. A year, July 1st. Yep. Yep.
It's like the phrase, like the Wild West gets thrown around a lot, but the last year has really been
kind of true,
the
right?
early days of the Wild West where anything went. Because there were no rules. There were literally no rules.
And I mean, when you think, because it's up to the states or whatever, and the states are all different. And when you $7 million, I mean, it's a lot of money, man. Yeah. $7 million, he says, that's his payroll, somewhere around $7 million for contracts for about 115 athletes, he said. And that's the combined payroll, about $7 million. And the biggest deal was a 2-year, $800,000, $400,000 a year, okay, for Kansas State basketball transfer Nigel Pack. But, you know, I think he's also, you know, there's also the Cavender twins,
yes,
the twin basketball, yes, women, basketball female players. Basketball players at UM. You know, John Ruiz, I guess, on April 21st, young lady, welcome to lunch. But has discussed, so I don't think anybody knows the exact terms of Ruiz's deal with the twin young women, and they're supposedly worth an estimated, well, they have an estimated $1 million in NIL sponsorship deals. They have 4 million TikTok followers, yeah, so
they're I mean, almost influencers as much as they are athletes. Although the one was I think conference player of the year, in her league. So
I'm not saying they're not good, but it's a lot of money being thrown around, and I'm not sure. I mean, they're doing videos for the company, they're promoting his company and for cigarette racing, But it's a lot of money for doing that stuff, I guess.
Yeah.
A
lot of attention, I think good, and obviously we're seeing maybe bad, depending where this NCAA probe leads. Although it doesn't sound like there's like an imminent, like, it doesn't sound like we're on like the verge of like Miami getting punished or anything like that.
I don't know. I mean, I could be.
Yeah. And they have said that they would. Basically, if they come up with rules and they found out that people violated them before the rules existed, you could get punished. Although that doesn't seem like it would like hold up in court necessarily.
The NCAA
is a lawyer, so
I don't know. The NCAA has nothing to do with court, as far as I'm concerned. But I think they also have to be careful because so many people have been down on the NCAA that they in the last several years that they've kind of loosened everything up, since the Nebbin Shapiro.
The SEC at some point could just be like, we secede from the SEC.
Yeah, I think that's what they're worried about, that football does that, you know, and then
already basically kind of runs independent, like the college football playoff is not run by the NCAA. So the NCAA does not have a whole lot of leverage on anything other than basketball because they run the NCAA tournament, which is their biggest moneymaker and obviously, you know, one of the probably right there with right behind the, in terms of U.S. sports, right behind the Super Bowl and college football playoff. It's the third biggest thing there is. But yeah, but, so Miami, obviously the jokes all week have been like, of course it was going to start with Miami. I would imagine they're doing similar things or plan to do similar things with Texas A&M and Texas, because Miami's not alone. They're unique in the fact in that it's John Ruiz is this brash, outspoken, very public about how much money, specific dollar figures he's making sure are kind of known. Obviously. And the fact that he is, you know, you look at like Texas or Texas A&M, there's a lot of collective stuff there. It's not one, you know, Miami, obviously there's some other like businesses that are, they're sponsoring guys. I know like Tyler Van Dyke has a ton of sponsorships from people other than John Ruiz. You know, obviously, all Canes, right. They've done a bunch of deals like for different apparel lines or like,
I think it's Canes Wear.
Canes Wear, sorry, not all Canes. Canes Wear has done a bunch of stuff
with,
Restrepo has one there. James Williams, right. Has one there, like a bunch.
James Williams has the big one. He's the big, you know, ambassador.
I remember early on in the process, there was a great photo of Gilbert Frierson holding up two tomahawk steaks at LaMelo's meat market.
That was great.
Miami is unique in that obviously there's one figurehead who is seems to be at least responsible for a lot of the money going to.
Yeah, I think that's why they.
And again, he's not trying to be subtle at all about what he's doing. Obviously, that's part of it is he wants to promote his businesses and stuff. And a lot of people never heard of Life Wallet before know about Life Wallet now. So it has paid off, I guess, in that sense. But
that's true. That is a good point. And
it also, like I said, brings the NCAA, you know, it's not exactly being subtle when the NCAA is looking for someone to try to figure out if they're breaking rules. That's an easy first guy to call.
Yeah, and they, you know, and like you said, I think you mentioned Texas A&M, Nick Saban. I mean, there's all kinds of goodies, right? You know, Nick Saban saying that Jimbo, Texas A&M bought every player on their team. He said that they bought every player on their team, made a deal for name, image, and likeness right out that.
Yeah.
We didn't buy one player, he said. And then of course, boom. Then Jimbo Fisher, you know, goes back and takes shots at him, you know, saying some bad things too. So it's the major programs, I would think, are like that are going to be under scrutiny.
Yeah. And again, the NCAA is really the thing here is they got to like figure out what the rules are, because that the biggest problem we have here is not schools breaking rules. It's that there are no rules. One of the rules is like no pay for play, basically, right? You cannot offer a recruit or a transfer or something, an NIL deal contingent on them either transferring to the school or signing with the school. I think there's some thought that there's definitely people who think the Nigel Pack deal, I'm not saying whether it's right or wrong, we don't know, but the Nigel Pack deal would qualify as that. And I mean, there's been a report, I think, that Nico Iamaleva, who's like a five-star quarterback going to Tennessee, or has like an $8 million NIL deal already in place. Like there are rules that are very, you know, and definitely being broken out there somewhere, whether it's at Miami or Tennessee or Texas A&M, like people are breaking that rule. The question is what, like, there's not really any specificity on what that rule is.
Correct.
And what qualifies something as a pay for play deal. You know, and like what, you know, if you get the word to, you know, if you're not signing anything before the deal comes into place, there's no paper trail, basically. So yeah, in the NCAA, they're a year behind and they've lost control of the situation. And Miami an easy place to start trying to fix it at. But
I think, you know, John Ruiz, I know, like I said, that he would like you know, he would like the schools to get involved, right? And approve kind of, you know, the people that are getting involved in these deals, I guess, like LifeWallet or whatever. He'd like them to, you know, get involved and say, yeah, they're okay, they're kosher, they're whatever. And that, you know, he thinks the NCAA should be involved also as far as, you know, looking at the representatives, the marketing agents, or, you know, the attorneys that are involved with the deal. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, really what needs to happen in some capacity is basically, like, you report all your NIL deals to your school's compliance officer, who then sends that to the NCAA. And like, there's like a record of all of this, because as of now, like I said, it's the Wild West, and there are no rules, essentially. And
you know what, David, I was also thinking, like, I mean, John Ruiz, yeah, he's a lawyer, and he's very confident that he's doing everything above board, and he insists that he would never do something that's not kosher, that he's not allowed to do. The thing is, you wonder, I'm sure Miami people are very nervous. You wonder, just because somebody thinks that, what if even if he's super smart and he really does know whatever, but somehow you never know what the other side is going to come up with. What if they come up with some really strange little hidden thing that nobody knew about, or some, you know what I mean? Like that. Oh no. Yeah. That's true. You did.
Yeah. I mean, they could change the rules. They can change the rules, and like, there's nothing you can do about it. Cause the NCAA,
I guess, or yeah. Or, oh yeah.
The NCAA is judge, jury, and executioner in a lot of ways.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So it's a little, I would say the least, nerve wracking, you know, and I'm sure the coaches just hate it, by the way. Yes, in one respect, the coaches love it if it's getting them kids, you know, interested in the sexiness of the possible things. But on the other side of it is the coaches are like, ugh, I don't want to deal with this crap. I just want to, you know.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I think, like, I mean, obviously A&M is in the middle of like this kind of firestorm too, because of the Saban comments, but. That's the argument for like kind of do this in silence, right? Is like, you're just not in the news all the time. Like, you know, Miami, frankly, is spending a lot less than a lot of their peers, basically, on this NIL stuff. Miami is, you know, they're getting good. You know, Nigel Pack was a first team all conference player at Kansas State. They haven't really landed a huge, but they've, you know, they haven't landed like a five-star offensive lineman, or, you know, Shamar Stewart obviously went to Texas A&M.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
You know, like, you need the NIL stuff. And I think Miami being open, I think John Ruiz being open about it has probably helped Miami a little bit, just to make it, you know, you talk a big game. Obviously he's spending like $7 million. Like you said, that's a lot of money.
Yes.
But like, you know, sometimes you gotta talk a bigger game. Because everyone knows Texas A&M and Texas have the money. They don't have to talk. Miami, they're new to this kind of, they got to talk a big game for it. And we'll see if it backfires at all on Miami. I'm still kind of skeptical that like anyone could be punished for what has happened already. Like you said, you never know, because the NCAA can.
I'm telling you.
On you that, like yeah.
Here's what's going to happen. Okay. All right. So what happens is the schools tell on each other.
Right.
That's the one school is going to say, Hey, here's a tip. Check out Miami, blah, blah, blah. Did you realize that blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. And then the other school, I'm not talking about like Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher, you know, like, I'm telling you, people are making phone calls to the NCAA.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is, the SEC, it's kind of mutually assured destruction, right? Where, like, if Saban really wants to snitch on Jimbo, you know what Jimbo's going to do? Snitch right back on Saban.
Of course. I'm sure they've done it already.
You got Miami, you got Florida State is obviously in the NIL game to a big, you know, they're a huge football school too.
Right.
Clemson, I'm sure, is, even though Dabo likes to act like he's above all that and doesn't want anyone to get paid. You know, there's people.
Right. Right.
You know, it's the ACC. Like, is Boston College out there spending a ton of money? Probably, like, not to this degree. Like,
right.
Right. That's the problem with that's the one thing that concerns me about if I'm Miami or maybe even Florida State or Clemson is like, these SEC schools want to snitch on you. They've got the power there. The SEC, the NCAA can't afford to piss off the SEC because, like we said, you can just secede and like start your own thing. And, you know, especially when they get Texas and Oklahoma and all those schools in there, you know, if Miami gets pissed or Florida State gets pissed or Clemson gets pissed and the ACC gets pissed, the NCAA is like, who cares? Do they care about?
I guess.
I'm a conspiracy a little bit here, but like at the same time, like you said, there's more mutually assured destruction with the snitching in the SEC than there is in the ACC because it's more competitive in the SEC, just in terms of the sheer number of teams that are probably spending the kind of money that Miami is spending. Miami is a little bit of an outlier in the ACC, like they always have been.
Yeah. Yep. Somehow I just feel like something's going to happen out of left field or whatever that we didn't expect. Something, I don't know. I think
the more likely course of action, in my opinion, is that they pass a bunch of rules that seem sort of targeted at Miami, not necessarily like specifically targeted at Miami, but Miami fans are going to feel like they're targeted at them, but they're really probably targeted at Texas,
of course. A&M,
Texas, Alabama, Georgia, all the schools that are doing this. And we might get something called like the people refer to as a John Ruiz rule or something somewhere along the lines here. But and I think there's, you know, I know, like I said earlier, it helps to like talk a big game. There is a difference between John Ruiz basically tweeting out, and I don't know if he's ever specifically done this, like we've signed Nigel Pack to a $400,000 a year deal. And just like having the guys tweet about LifeWallet, like there's a difference between that. And I wonder if we'll get to a point like that eventually where you got to actually like be promoting the business rather than making the promotion off signing the deal. Like the promotion has to be like something real rather than making a headline. And I think eventually like it's all gonna.
Say he's doing that. I mean, he's doing that. They're all doing their whatever.
Yeah,
I do think they're paid an awful lot of money for whatever they're doing, but I mean, he is doing that, and I like that he's upfront about it.
Yeah,
you know, I think that's great for us.
Yeah, it makes it easy to write about, and like you said, gets his name in the headlines and stuff. So,
it's very cool.
But I wonder if they're going to change some of the regulations on how this stuff is disclosed and stuff like that to maybe. Make it a little bit more uniform where, and again, like I think Miami would maybe benefit from that where you don't have one guy just drawing the attention of the NCAA. All right, let's move over to recruiting, which is obviously tied into this. It is recruiting season. As I said at the top here, Miami had a bunch of official visits. I think 6 official visitors on campus over the weekend. They got something like 6 more coming this weekend. Had a couple the weekend before. And then the last weekend of June is Legends Camp, where they'll have a bunch of visitors too. We just have not talked a lot about recruiting. So I figured we'd dive in and kind of talk about the 5 biggest recruiting needs Miami has here. They've added, since the start of June, 1 commit. On Tuesday, got Jackson Carver, according to Rivals, a 4-star tight end. He's now at Loomis Chaffey School in Connecticut, originally from Minnesota, was at a prep school in Indiana for a year. Really interesting player, I'll say. A lot of people have obviously written about his background. He was committed to game for lacrosse at one point. At one point, he was getting recruited by Dartmouth for hockey. He played his first year of football last year, in Indiana, because he moved for, or transferred to play lacrosse there, and all of a sudden hockey season didn't overlap anymore, so he was able to try out football. And then he winds up dropping lacrosse, going all in on football. He's doing a post-grad year, ran track and field last year too, so a four-sport athlete. But they
I mean, sounds good to me. I 6 foot six, yeah, right?
It's a cool pickup. I think they got bigger fish to fry though, as we get to the rest of the month here. Number one I have on this list, it's always number one on the list, and that's a quarterback. No quarterback yet committed.
Nope.
Need one every year.
Yes,
maybe two if you can get them, because with the way guys transfer now, it's never a bad idea to get as many as you can. And Miami is still swinging big there. Jaden Rashada, a four-star top 50 prospect from Pittsburgh, California, just pushed back his commitment date, which seemed like a good sign for Miami. They didn't really seem like they were had a shot, a real good shot at him when he was set to commit this weekend. He's got one official visit yet left to use. So I think the big thing to monitor, if Miami can get him on campus for that last official visit before he makes his decision at the end of the month, that's a good sign. But if not, they got to find a guy somewhere anyway. Emery Williams from Milton, Florida is kind of the main name to know there. I have not seen him play, but I've heard good things. He's not very highly ranked, but kind of one of those like late bloom. Well, you know, he's from Milton, so it's like not big. He's not from South Florida or Tampa, you know, one of those big markets.
He just tweeted out that he's excited.
Yeah, he's official visiting this weekend. People think he might be a little under the radar because, again, like I said, he doesn't play the same type of competition necessarily up there and obviously just doesn't get the same level of exposure as he would if he was at IMG or Miami Central or something.
Jaden Rashada, is he a what kind of quarterback is he? He's kind of a drop back.
Yeah, big guy. I'm not sure the exact size.
He's not a runner though, is he?
Not that I know of. 6'4", 180. I mean, he's got big, like good athleticism, good big size too.
Very
so
good. Few interceptions to touchdown, the ratio. 27 touchdowns.
Yeah, he's and the interesting thing about him is he plays 7-on-7. He's from California, but he plays 7-on-7 with the Miami Immortals. So,
okay,
yeah, 7-on-7 has quickly become AAU. Only kind of even crazier, honestly. So he's obviously got, you know, like Robbie Washington, who's committed to Miami, plays for that team. Andy Jean, who I wouldn't be surprised if he commits to Miami soon, plays for that team. So he's got some connections down here, but Miami's got some work to do there. Any other quarterback thoughts?
I mean, no, I agree with you on, you know, on people possibly transferring.
Right.
That's all. I do think that's a definite concern. I think this season will tell as far as Tyler. If he has a great season and goes pro, that's one thing.
Right. Yeah. We've talked a lot about the ideal scenario. It sets up nicely where you got Tyler for a year, then Jake for a year or two, Corey Brown for a year or two.
Yeah, exactly.
It never works out quite as well as you plan, right? Best way.
Right. And now they're going. Yeah, I mean, Miami's kind of big time quarterback wise. So they've got to kind of keep that going, keep that pipeline going.
Rashada would qualify as that. Williams, like I said, a little like kind of, I think he's only barely a top 1,000 recruit. You know, he's a late kind of emerger on the recruiting scene. So, probably wind up higher than that. I know people are high on him. So, you know. You want to get a like blue chip stud kind of guy every year. And obviously Rashada would qualify. Williams as of now would not. We'll see how his senior year goes and all that kind of stuff. But they got options and they want to swing big though. They've been swinging big all cycle. They've been on Dante Moore, who was a five-star quarterback from Michigan. Nico Amaleva, who I talked about, visited at one point. So they swung big on the national guys. And Rashad is kind of their last great chance to get one of those like true elite prospects. Number two I got on the list is got to get these local wide receivers. It's a really, really good local wide receiver class. You got Brandon Innes at American Heritage, who's a five-star. Got Jalen mm-hmm. Brown at Gulliver, who's a five-star. You've got Hakeem Williams at Stranahan, who I think, according to some of the services, is a five-star. And also our overall athlete of the year for Broward. Actually, Jalen Brown, also one of our overall athletes.
And Jalen, yep.
As a two-sport track and football guy, Hakeem Williams was like a real contender to be our basketball player of the year. He's not going to play basketball in college because he's a 6'5" center, but he's okay. Just kind of gives you the sense of what kind of athlete he is. And then you got a bunch of other guys, you know, Robbie Washington, who's already committed, is a really good potential slot type guy. And a two-way athlete, he could actually play in the secondary too. Nathaniel Joseph at Edison, who just decommitted from Clemson, is maybe the best slot guy in the country. I mentioned Andy Jean from Northwestern, who was at one point committed to Miami, and I would not be surprised if he's back in the class at some point soon. They've got a chance to, I think, a Brown, Joseph, Jean, Washington class is like very likely at this point. You'd lack some size. That's why you'd love to get Hakeem.
Yeah. I was going to ask you about that, about size. They've had a lot of slot people that are really good, but they could use some really big bodies, but
yeah. Who's the last like great big receiver Miami had? It's been a while, right?
Andre Johnson. No, I'm kidding.
Lawrence Cager wound up being pretty good at Georgia.
He was a pretty
good red zone target for Miami.
I don't think
he would qualify.
No. I'm trying to think. And neither would. How about the all-time leading receiver for a season? 1,200 yard. He played for the Dolphins. Oh my God.
Philip Dorsett? No.
No.
Oh, Hearns?
Yeah, but he's not. Yeah.
He was like skinny. He was like lanky and skinny.
He wasn't a big body. I'm just like naming people and thinking who's a big, strong.
KJ's not like tall, but he was like big and strong like that. KJ Osborne.
Yeah, he was big and strong. But yeah, wasn't tall, super tall. No.
Yeah.
No, it's a really good point. I mean,
they've not had a lot.
And they need that because now they have the quarterbacks.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. They've got
big arm.
Obviously, we saw Charleston Rambo, like that size.
But he was so skinny.
Skinny, but he gives you like 6'1", 6-foot frame, like long arms. I think they've got a couple of guys like that. Like Jalen Brown is probably similarly, obviously, he's a lot younger than Rambo, but similarly sized. I think Andy Jean, he's kind of probably draw a lot of comparisons to Romello Brinson, obviously a Northwestern guy, but similar type receiver. But Hakeem Williams is really the only guy locally that gives you that big physical. I don't know what he's listed at, 6'4", 6'5", average and double-double for a state championship basketball team. He's the guy, like, to me, like Brandon Innes is kind of, I think, the top ranked guy in this group. I think that the thought for a while has been that he's probably going to wind up at USC. He was committed to Oklahoma for a while before Lincoln Riley left. Hakeem Williams is like as good as Brandon Innes is, and he's incredible. You know, like Jalen Brown is similar. Like all these guys, like if you put four of them together, you kind of can match what you expect to get out of Innes. But Hakeem Williams is that big, like, home run swing that if they can get him, then it's like a home run haul, I think, for this, because he's different. Like in South Florida, we just don't get a lot of those big receivers, right? It's always
interesting. I mean, they have the transfer. They got Frank Ladson, right?
Yeah.
Out of Clemson. Skinny,
though, but yeah. But
I mean, I think he's 6'3", or they say he's 6'3". I know.
He's very tall.
He's thin. He's thin.
Yeah.
What do they list?
You have the roster up in front of you. It sounds like, what do they list Brinson at?
Brinson, they list
6'2",
185.
He's pretty tall too, but he's skinny also. But he's also young, so
and they got and they've got Michael Redding, 6'2".
Yeah. Now, you know where they're getting their size, though, is when you recruit a 6'6 tight end and maybe get another 6'6 tight end committed later in the week. So
right. I, by the way, about that, are we talking about the tight end again? We already did the tight end, right? So the tight end, you know, I love the lacrosse playing.
But yeah, so actually, I have number four on my list. This isn't really a need, but I think it's important to point out there's just this focus on athleticism and multi-sport.
Yeah.
Because Carver qualifies for that. And Reed McKenzie, this other 6'6 tight end who visited over the weekend. And Miami's in the top two for him with a decision coming soon, he says. Another guy who played his first year of basketball first year of football last year was always a basketball player before. So they've got this focus on, I think it's a confidence in the ability to develop guys, this focus on get the athlete here, get the guy, you know, like as a competitor, all that kind of stuff. And we'll figure out the football when they get here.
Yeah, I agree. Especially tight ends. It seems like, you know,
that's the position, right? How many basketball players you can grade tight end? Jimmy Graham, obviously.
Jimmy Graham. Yeah. But Jimmy Graham, I mean.
At Miami, he wasn't great, right? At tight end.
Well.
He's pretty good.
He was good. He had a couple of big drops that people went crazy about, but he was good. Yeah. And he was learning the position,
right,
and
exactly.
he got better fast. But I just think that guys that are like this kid we're talking about, that are like really good athletes all around at the tight end position, are very valuable. Yeah. Somehow they end up, because they're really tough, and they
so a lot of guys do the basketball to football, right? And the worries always are they like tough enough, or they, you know, that's Jaleel Skinner was a basketball player, same idea coming in.
Look at the sports that
Carver played, and it was lacrosse and hockey, and he's gonna block basically.
Yeah, they're not at all scared about going over the middle and boom, you know. Mm-hmm. So
another position with that same idea is you look at a lot of these linemen they're recruiting. They've already got one from Frankie Tinalao, who's going to play at LaSalle in the fall, from Australia, you know, was a rugby player, picked up the sport late. You look a couple of weeks ago, they had this offensive lineman, Olas Alanen. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correct, but he's from Finland. We'll play at Loomis Chafee with Carver next year. Offensive lineman who's, you know, got Alabama, like he's kind of become one of the best high school offensive linemen in the country. They've got, I want to make sure I get his name right. Not that I'm going to pronounce it right. Collins Achiampong, who's out in Anaheim, defensive end from Ghana. Like they've got all these, there's this just wide focus on find me the athlete, find me the guy who's played multiple sports, and we trust our ability to develop them. I think that's pretty telling that how many of those guys Miami is going after right now.
Yeah, it's a good, really good point. They do think they have the ability to develop anybody.
Especially the offensive linemen, right? You look at, I mean, Mario, his track record there, like it's kind of like a market inefficiency to get guys like that who are maybe a little raw or unpolished. If you can develop, offensive lineman is always the hardest position to evaluate recruiting wise. You look at how many guys or not power five guys wind up going in the first round. It's offensive lineman all the time because it's such a hard position. The five-star guys, sometimes you get an Evan Neal who is the best tackle in high school and winds up being the best tackle in the country in college. But a lot of times it's Zion Nelson, who no one knew about until Miami got him at the last minute, and now he's one of the best offensive linemen in the country. And
Navon Donaldson, you know, there are people that come out of high school and that are, you know, five star, whatever, or, you know, they're the number one, whatever, all American, nothing seems to pan out as much as they thought it would. So,
mm-hmm. We're starting to run long, so let's speed through these last two. We're talking about linemen. Miami, another thing that strikes me about what they're doing, they are looking everywhere for good offensive linemen. Got it. This month alone, they have players visiting on the offensive line, one from IMG. I mentioned Allen in from Finland/Connecticut. Got Peyton Kirkland coming from Orlando. They got another one coming from South Carolina this weekend. They got one coming from Georgia on defense. Wow. They had a kid from Texas last weekend. One coming from Washington, Minnesota, Georgia. I mentioned the Ghanaian/Anaheim from Anaheim, defensive end. So they're looking all over for talent there. And that is, we talked when Mario got hired about the way it's going to change. They're going to be a little bit more, I think, of a national recruiting brand than they are just focusing on local. I think, you know, wide receiver, they might not take a wide receiver from outside South Florida, but Mario is going to go out and get linemen wherever he can find them, especially on the, you know, you can find good defensive ends, good defensive tackles down here in South Florida, but you know, he knows you gotta look far and wide for good offensive linemen and good defensive tackles.
Yeah, definitely. And he'll get the transfers and he'll get whatever from wherever. And I think he's really smart that he's made that his kind of priority. I think the trenches.
Yes.
On both sides. It's really, really smart because, I mean, to me, the key this year is protecting Tyler.
Yeah, definitely.
That's to me, that's the key.
And you know what? The priority of the next year is going to be protecting Jake Garcia, probably. So,
yeah, exactly. And I think protecting Tyler because, you know, yeah, you need the good, of course, you need the good receivers, which, you know, it's been a struggle for them, kind of. That position has been challenging, put it that way. I don't know. But the linemen, I mean, that'll just open everything up. Yeah. So maybe it's not a five-star receiver, but if Tyler does his thing and he has time to do it, I think they're in really good shape.
Yeah. Last one I have is they still just kind of need, like, you know, every great recruiting class, it feels like, has that one guy, right? James Williams. The guy who like kind of rallies the troops and attracts attention a little bit, you know, sometimes an out of state five-star guy who joins early and all of a sudden everyone's like, oh, most of the time though, it's a guy like James Williams who he commits and all of a sudden, like, who doesn't want to go team up with James Williams at Miami? I think the James Williams, Leonard Taylor class, like, has had knock-on effects moving forward where you see a guy like Wesley Bissainth who watched them last year start or contribute a lot as freshmen, or like there's some good pieces there. Like they still need that guy, I think, locally. Right now they actually only have one four-star, according to 24/7 composite rankings, only one four-star recruit committed. That's Robbie Washington from Palmetto. I think getting a guy like Nathaniel Joseph would help, who's kind of like very well respected locally, 7-on-7 superstar. Has been, you know, two-time all-county guy. Like, kind of everyone knows, like, inner-city Miami kid. Like, everyone just kind of knows, like, he's one of those local stars. They need a guy like that. And I think he would help. I think Ruben Bain is the other one I would, like, look at, who, like, if you just try to get him in the fold. His brother is currently, like, a GA at Miami. He's Tolbert Bain's nephew, I think. So he's got, like, all those Miami connections. Get one of those guys, and I think it starts things moving in the right direction, right? You need that momentum.
I agree. Israel. Yeah, agree. Totally. The local, they need to keep the, you know, stay in the crib.
Yeah.
Team. They do.
Like they would obviously love to get Jaylen Brown, but he's, you know, probably going to wait until September or something to commit. Like he's not in a rush. So you got to find the guys who, you know, you can get on board early and get the snowball rolling in the right direction.
Yeah. At what point do you think they, or do they ever get nervous? Like, we need to get more guys, you know, or they don't, it's still way early, right?
But if they get, you know, obviously they'll have a lot of visitors on campus that Legends Camp weekend, which is next weekend.
That's going to be big.
If they get to the end of June and they're still sitting with like six guys, only one four-star recruit in the class, like, I think all of a sudden, I don't think they will ever panic, because I don't think Mario is one to panic necessarily this quickly. But I think that would be the time where you're like, all right, come on, like, Let's start getting some guys in the fold here.
No, I don't think Mario panics. I think he gets revved up.
Yes, like, that's probably the
Yeah, I think he'll get like, we think he's hyper or whatever. He'll be on overdrive. I can't even imagine what it's going to be like at Some Paradise Camp, but Legends. I can't even imagine. Can you imagine when they start like marketing that like big time? Yeah. When they start putting out the videos and all the stuff, little teases. Yeah, he needs to get. They're probably going to thrive on a couple of nice commitments out of that,
exactly.
And hope that it. Yeah, so that's right. Going to be fun. Wonder who's going to talk. I wonder how Mario's going to do it with like who gives the speech and
Be interesting. I kind of bummed I'm not going to be there for it, but Barry, Jeff, I know. Like I said, I'll have it covered for us.
Mario.
So let's finish up there. Thanks as always for listening. You can follow Susan on Twitter at @smillerdegnan. You can follow me on Twitter at @dbwilson2. I've been writing a lot of recruiting stuff this week. So you
can check
that out. Finally got, between hockey and basketball, there was not a lot of time for it. And then all of a sudden I got to this week and I was like, got nothing to do. Let's catch up on Miami.
No, you had plenty. Larry Bluestein, all the our little awards.
Roland Smith gets a Lifetime Achievement Award.
Oh, Roland Smith.
We talked about last week. So,
yep.
All right. Thanks again, though, for listening. And I don't know if we'll be back next week. We'll kind of play it by ear. We're both going on vacation next weekend.
Yeah, I think that's kind of my long summer vacation coming up. Maybe I think we could find something to talk about.
We'll hopefully come back next week. But if not, we'll talk to you guys later.